So we continue this week in our study of the Lord's Prayer. Approximately 66 English words that almost every church that you go to in the Western world will pray on Sunday morning. And so we're taking the next few weeks. Last week we started with the beginning. We're taking small bits of the story, or of the prayer, each week, and looking at them in a new way. To share with you a little bit of how we're doing that, to remind you, is that we're trying to go back to regain the text and the prayer in its original form. We're trying to go back and hear it in the words that Jesus would have probably spoken it in, which is in Aramaic. To remind you, there were at least three languages that Jesus spoke. He would have spoken Hebrew because he was Jewish. He was brought up in a Jewish household. He went to Hebrew school as a child and learned all about the law and the prophets. And so he would have known Hebrew. He would have been able to read it. He would have been able to speak it. And that's what would have been spoken in the home and definitely in his place of worship. He would have also spoken Greek, because remember that this is a Roman-occupied territory. And the place that the language of that time of the empire was Greek. So he would have needed to speak Greek. But then there's Aramaic. And that was the language of the people. It was the language of the area. It was a very agrarian language. But it's amazing how when we look at the words of this prayer as they were spoken in that Aramaic language, it gives us the opportunity to think about it in a new way. Last week we talked about the words Abun and Shema. And what that pointed us to was that beginning of the prayer and talking about where God is and who God is as cosmic parent. A greeting that gives new insight into who God is. If you'd like to pay attention, maybe you weren't here last week and you want to catch up and hear, if you go to our website, you'll find that the sermons are on a podcast there. And you can listen to them, and you can even download them if you'd like, but you can check them out there on the podcast. So today we come to the next line of the prayer. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done. Now, I remind you, I spoke about this just briefly last week, that Jesus was a rabbi. He was a teacher. Now, the way that it would have worked back in those days, to remind you, is that Jesus, as a rabbi, would have needed students. And so, when he came to the Jordan and was baptized and took on his ministry, as any rabbi would, he took around him students. Now, most of us, we remember, we think about Jesus' disciples, and I have pictures in my mind from movies and from my picture Bibles. They all looked about 30 in there, and they all had big beards, you know, and they were older. And so whenever I pictured that, I thought, okay, they were probably a little younger than I am. Whenever I was a kid, they were much older than I was. But that's what I thought of. Matthew, the tax collector. Simon Peter, the grizzled old fisherman. The reality is that Jesus probably gathered these young men at about age 16. Maybe at tops 18. But this rabbi took with him these students and began moving about in the countryside. Now, what a rabbi did is a rabbi went around and taught the students. And the rabbi did that in a way of taking stories from what he saw. So as they were walking along and he would see a field, he would begin to explain and to talk about God and talk about faith in a way that they understood. And so that's where we get the story of the sower and the seeds. That Jesus would have sat down and the rabbi and the students would have gathered at the rabbi's feet. Wherever it was that they stopped, and he would unfold the scriptures, tell the stories, and explain them to them. He would pray with them. He would go to church with them and worship. That's what a rabbi did. But then there are the prophets. Prophets were a little bit different. I mentioned last week, prophets don't pray. Prophets don't pray because their job is to get you to act. They see things differently in the world. They see things that are not the way that they're supposed to with God. And so they speak out. They are those who speak for God. That's where you get Isaiah. That's where you get Jeremiah. That's where you get Daniel, Hosea, Habakkuk. All of these different prophets that rose up and spoke out. And shared how things were wrong, how things needed to be shaped, and where God was calling God's people to act in a different way. Prophets didn't pray. But what's fascinating is there's always this question that runs amongst the Gospels of who Jesus is. You may remember the stories that you find here and there where Jesus, the disciples say, you know, who are you? And Jesus asked them, who do you say that I am? The way you found out who a rabbi was by listening to the rabbi's prayer. But you also learned who a prophet was by how they spoke to power. So is Jesus a rabbi or is he a prophet? We're consumed with who Jesus is. Who this person is that we, as Christians, call our God. Call the Christ. Call the Messiah. When I was first in the ministry, when I first started, I actually even have a stole that was made by some of my young people. And it has all over it, WWJD. You guys remember that? What would Jesus do? That went around. And the kids were fascinated. You get bracelets, you get t-shirts, all that thing. What would Jesus do? Then we would place that on different things. I even tried it one time in a very contentious spot in the church. So we had, in the church that I was serving, we had these young people, they had a liturgical dance group. And it was led by one of the women in the church. And it was beautiful. These kids would take songs, Christian songs, hymns, and things, and they would do dances in the beginning out in front of the church as their gift to God. And as a youth minister, I thought this was great. The kids were getting involved. It was beautiful. It was all kinds of wonderful. And I went to go visit one of the church members. And they said, can you believe those girls dancing up in front of that church? Oh my gosh, it just makes, I can't even think about it. It was the most horrible thing that I'd ever seen in all of church. Now, I'm a young seminarian, and I'm thinking, I can handle this. So I said, well, you know, I thought it was beautiful. They were sharing their gifts and talents, and they were worshiping God, and we all do it in different ways, and we need to celebrate their gifts as children. She said, well, I just thought it was reprehensible. I just hope they never do it again. So I dug deep into my theological handbag and pulled out, what would Jesus do? And I said, you know, I just sometimes think, what would Jesus have done if Jesus had been there and seen these little kids sharing their gift to God on that Sunday morning? And she came back and said, well, if Jesus were there, I think he would have thrown up. What would Jesus do? I think we can all place what we would want Jesus to do in a certain situation. Even today, you see things that are out there about who Jesus is. And a lot of times we place in Jesus in a way that he looks a lot like we want him to look. Was Jesus really a preacher or a teacher or a leader? Who do we see him as? Many times we make Jesus into something that makes a little bit more sense and that we could sit by in the pew. And we get upset when we get upset and smile. And there are even those out there who have an idea of who Jesus would love and who Jesus wouldn't love. But this prayer gives us a glimpse into who Jesus is in a powerful way, I do believe. When Jesus asked, "Who do you say that I am?" there is an invitation to listen to this prayer about who Jesus is and who God is. So, as we continue on, there is something that's very interesting that cannot be passed up and that is hard to kind of deal with. And that is when Jesus enters into this next part of the prayer, he uses a very loaded word right off the bat. He says, "Thy kingdom come." Now, most of us don't realize what Jesus is talking about. We're pretty familiar, and we've said this word over and over again. And when we think about kingdom, what is it that we think about? Do we think about some place like where we live now? Because this word is very important. It is not a theological word. This word is a word of power. See, what happened is that as soon as we began to become a civilization, as soon as we began to organize people, then folks started stepping up as the leaders of these different civilizations. And it never really worked to just have a group of people that were together. We had to have somebody in charge. And it started out small. But it continued through time to get larger and larger, to the point of which even God's people said, "Look, we don't just need God to lead us. We want a king. We want a kingdom here on earth." And we know that in the midst of even the biblical narrative that we find over and over again, the kingdoms conquer kingdoms and move over here, and you have good kings and you have bad kings, and you have leaders and queens and folks who direct others and stand on top of them to lead. Some did it in humane ways, but most of the time we recognize that kingdoms are not places of love and compassion. And so when Jesus uses this word and he says Malachot in Aramaic, this is a loaded word, and this gets Jesus in trouble. Because this changes a prayer from like we talked about for last week about who God is, and it moves him from being a rabbi to standing in front of the powerful and announcing that this is going to be a different kind of ministry. steps forward and stands in direct contradiction to the kingdom and the empire of Rome. Thy kingdom come. God's kingdom be here. And thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Tezekuana is the word, will. It is this desire. It's not just a, your will be done. This is not something that is passive, that in some ways we step back and say, okay, God, just come and to be here in this place. Last week we talked about this understanding of a tiered relationship to God and how the Greek pushes us to this idea that God sits up above us, up on that hill like the Greek gods did and throw lightning bolts. This passive understanding is that God would just enact onto the earth and make everything right. That's the problem with this, with the text, when we move it into and away from the language that was spoken. It moves into a place where it is very passive, where we just say, God, we're going to step back and we're going to let you do everything that you need to do to make sure that everything's okay here, that you're going to take control back. But there's something very interesting, because the word that Jesus uses when it comes to will, it's not just for somebody to do something to us. It is a desire to be in connection. It is a heart's desire. It is something that we wish. It is something that we want. And it acts in a different way. Because a king acts upon the people. But a cosmic divine parent that Jesus is talking about invites a relationship that will change what is happening. See, because the understanding is we've lost this, is this idea of, with the next part where it is, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Again, the language that we have adopted, that we have come to understand throughout all these years, is that heaven is something up here and earth is down here, and we just want things to be like it is up there. But instead, the language in Aramaic invites us to understand that what can be possible happens simultaneously. Throughout all of the scriptures, when the prophets speak, they don't just want a divided world. The prophets speak in a way that they want what is happening around here to mirror the way that God's reign would be. And they're calling on the people to do something about it. If we read the prayer from a distance, and we say, God, we'd just like for you to come down and do everything that you need to do to make this the way that you want it to be, we miss the point of the prayer. There's one thing to ask a rabbi how to pray. There's another to actually pray it. Do you follow what I'm saying? It's one thing to say Jesus' prayer. It's another thing to say the Lord's Prayer and for us to repeat it. But it's another thing altogether for us to pray those words. Tete is the word that is in there that means come. Come, O Lord. This is not just a, we want this to happen. This is now. We want to be a part of it. This is a call, an invitation to be a part of it. And when Jesus prays it, it's one thing. But when we say that, when we say, come and do this, be a part of our relationship, it changes it. Because that means that we have to be a part of it as well. Rabbis' prayers tell about who they are, but when we start praying that prayer, it begins shaping who we are. And this is a prayer that can get us in trouble. Because what this does is it says that I'm not just going to trust other people. I'm not just going to say that something else in the kingdom or somebody else can dictate how to make this world better. What it means is that we have to take responsibility, and we're ready to do that. And there is a cost to that. Because this is not just a rabbi's prayer. This is also a prophetic one. This is one that will place us standing face to face with the empire. This will place us standing face to face with the powers that stand in front of us, and us calling out and saying, we want something different. We want something more compassionate. We want something more where all receive God's love, where all are received as one, and where this can be a safe world, where we can make a difference, where all have enough to eat, where all have a place to live, and where God's idea of the world is made manifest, where it is so close that we can touch it, that we are making it here, not some other time. But we want to be a part of this now, oh God. The Roman Empire used might. They used force to change the world. They even talk about it in the development of the civilization. There are certain pieces, artifacts, that change the world in powerful ways. One of which was a spear. It was an enormous spear developed out of Rome. And it was so long that the soldiers would carry it, and multiple soldiers would, and they would run through the armies of their enemies. It was a killing force no one had known. And they claimed that this piece of civilization, this artifact, this tool, this weapon would change the world and would bring peace. And the reality is that we continue to build weapons. We continue to build a better killing weapon to bring peace. But Jesus stands up to them and says, no, that is your idea of kingdom. That is your idea of empire. That is not who God is. And Jesus stands forth, not with a spear, not with a shield, but instead stands there with open arms. Jesus is the one who comes with love and compassion, with words, stories, conversations, and with meals over a table. And that is how he invites us to bring about God's kingdom. When we pray this prayer, we have to make a choice. When we say we want to be a part of bringing about your reign and making this world look more like you, O God, what will we take with us? Jesus gives us prayer. be a part of bringing about a world that looks more like you each and every day. Let us go and accept the call from our rabbi and our prophet.
Thank you for listening to the White Oak Pond Christian Church podcast. We hope that it's been a blessing to you this day. White Oak Pond seeks to be a place where we accept one person at a time to Christ's never-ending and forgiving love. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast so that you can receive sermons each and every week. And also rate us. It really helps. Thank you again, and may you know joy in powerful ways this week.